Welcome into the Email Design Podcast, where we talk about the latest in email design and development. We are your hosts for today's program. I am Kevin Mandeville.
And I am Jason Rodriguez.
And we have a special guest interview today on the podcast. We are very excited to be welcoming Alex Kelly from MailChimp. Alex, welcome into the podcast.
Hi. Thanks, guys.
Super excited to have you here and talk about your story and everything that you're doing over at MailChimp. And so how we like to kick off every single interview is how you got started learning just HTML and CSS, because it's really cool to hear sort of how people started and then how they got into actual HTML email development. So how did you actually learn just basic HTML and CSS coding?
Yeah, so like a lot of people our age, I'd say probably like most people, the first time I saw HTML and CSS was on MySpace. So I had no clue what it was. I just knew when I would get themes from people, I didn't want their name at the bottom of my page. It was always people like Sparkle Kitty or like Rar Scene Core, and it didn't go with my aesthetic. So I didn't want like their names at the bottom. So I would just creep in the code and find where stuff was and delete it. And then eventually started making my own layouts.
Awesome.
Nice. Were there, outside of MySpace, were there any like first projects or even first jobs that you first started using your coding skills?
Well, I was an accounting major in college and I had some free time. So I took a web development class and then realized I was pretty into it and recognized it from the stuff I had done in MySpace. But that was the first time I'd seen it since then. And immediately after taking that class, I switched to computer science.
Nice.
And then started doing that full time.
Very cool. So you definitely come from more of a, I guess with a computer science degree, it would be more of a programmer standpoint as opposed to like front end design or anything like that.
Right. So in school, I was doing mostly back end stuff. And then I got an internship at a communications company in my hometown. So Augusta, Georgia, which no one ever knows what that is, but it's like basically 2 hours south of Atlanta. And I started doing data migrations for them. So queries and stuff. And then like 3 months into my internship, they said they needed someone who could do email stuff. And I was like, yeah, I can probably figure that out. And it's been emails since then, like all the time.
So you got into email development through your internship.
Yeah. Completely by accident. They were just like, we need a person to do this after I'd done the databasing stuff. And I was like, okay, sure. So
did you have any idea whatsoever what you were getting into at that time?
Oh, no, no. And I had no idea it would turn into such a thing. Like now I'm obsessed. And it was just completely random. They were like, we have a marketing person who kind of does it right now. We need someone who has some code experience. You've taken one front end class. Do you think you could figure it out? And I just kind of did. And yeah, it turned into a huge thing.
That's all you really need for the most part, right? Between, you know, MySpace and maybe a class here, you probably have the basics that you need to get started anyways in email. Yeah. So how long were you there at that internship for doing email?
So I had the internship for a year. And then after I'd been there for a year, they offered me a full-time position. And then I worked there full-time managing all of their email stuff for another year.
Wow. So you did that whole role, and did you transition to MailChimp after that?
After that, I actually went to a conference with someone that I worked with, and I met Fabio. So the dude with the beard, if you don't know who he is, he's the mean guy on Twitter with the beard. And I brought my computer up to him after his talk and was trying not to throw up on his shoes because I was so nervous. I had already heard of MailChimp, so I knew what MailChimp was. And I knew the kind of stuff they did, and I was really into what they were doing. So I brought my laptop up to him with some of my template code and just wanted to get some feedback from him to see, you know, maybe in a couple of years or whatever, I could apply for a job at MailChimp. And he ended up asking me to come in for an interview because of it. And a few months after that, I moved up to Atlanta, and then I've been here for 2 years.
That's awesome. Yeah. I feel like, yeah, most people are intimidated when they meet Fabio the first time. I think I definitely was. So I feel like
he's
that's a common feeling.
He's nicer than he appears to be.
Yeah,
he's actually really great. So.
Yeah, which is why I was excited. I mean, you know, Fabio is known by some people, but that's also why I was excited to have you on here, you know, give shine to some more MailChimp peeps. But one thing I want to point out too, Alex, is you actually left school. You did not complete your degree. Is that correct?
Right. So when I initially moved up here, I started taking classes at Georgia State and found that it was extremely difficult to do both full time, because I was doing that in Augusta, but at MailChimp, it was like my responsibilities were just way greater than I ever could have imagined. So I had about a year left and I decided to put more time into work than school, but I will be going back to school. I have found an online program that I think is going to work. So I'm just going to have to make time for it. But I did give it up initially to focus more on the work I was doing here.
I just think it's an interesting point just to, you know, showcase, because, you know, both you and Jason do not have a college degree here on this podcast. I'm nope. Like the lone wolf here. and we haven't gone over my story, but questionable at best for that aspect too. So, but I mean, I just think it's interesting, and it's kind of cool to show that you can still do this without having a college degree.
Yeah. I mean, I've learned so much just like working here and talking to everyone. Like, you don't necessarily have to have a degree in this stuff. And the education system is like further behind than people who are actually working in the industry. So I'd say even, you know, just front end development or programming in general, like you're probably going to learn more interacting with people who are actually working in the field than you are through like a traditional education.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think more and more people are moving to like use like side projects and things like that as a way to educate themselves. And that's what I like about the tech industry. If you can kind of demonstrate that you have these skills, then you're pretty damn employable, which is nice.
Yeah.
So you mentioned that at MailChimp, your responsibilities were much greater. So I'm kind of curious what your guys' team structure is like, how many email developers there are, how your kind of workflow goes when you're working for MailChimp.
Yeah. So there used to be two of us. It was me and then it was Fabio. And now it's me. So, I mean, I'm on the front end team technically, which Fabio runs now. And there are like 10 of us. But they all do like actual front end dev for the application. And it's just me by myself doing the emails. Yeah.
Do you like interface a lot with marketing or kind of like the visual design teams or anything like that to get your cues from them? Or is it more you develop on your own and just take that stuff back to them to get approval?
So we work pretty closely with other departments, mostly like design and marketing. But a lot of like the actual development stuff, it's just kind of handed off to me once it's decided that an email needs to be built or something new needs to be designed. And I mean, we do communicate back and forth. It's not like they just, hand it off and now I just do it. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of like back and forth, but then when it comes to the actual development stuff, like I build it and then put it wherever it needs to be.
Nice. So when you're actually building stuff, what kind of tools do you use?
Okay, people are going to hate this. I write code in Dreamweaver. I use a
blog. Hold on. People don't hate that. Dreamweaver's the most popular editor amongst email developers.
Uh-huh. I know, but like everyone else in the world seems to hate it, which is so rude because it's amazing. But it's got like the split view, just works really well. I can click on something in like the preview and then go directly to the code. And I've spent years perfecting my color scheme. Like, I'm not leaving Dreamweaver.
Have you tried the new beta version of it that they released?
I keep getting the notification to do it, and I haven't done it.
Yeah.
It's like, you have 4 days to switch. I'm like, okay, I'll switch in 4 days.
Yeah, so I'm assuming if you're coding everything in Dreamweaver, you're likely not using like an advanced build process with like Grunt or, you know, a static site generator or anything like that. Are there any other tools that live outside of Dreamweaver or like work in tandem with it that you use?
I mean, I have some snippets in Dreamweaver, but most of the stuff that we do, I just like code it by hand. I have some templates that are just like saved and I just, you know, work out of those. So just save a new version and start working. And we do use GitHub. And so all of our code is held like in a repository. So I've got like version control. I'm not just saving everything on my machine locally and just having to guess what I was changing. I do actually like push code to our repo. So that's been really nice. Honestly, that's been the the greatest thing that has been like the biggest influence on the way that I develop since I started working here. Cause I used to just keep everything on my machine and I was just like, oh, okay. Like I'll highlight this one green and call it like, okay, for real final version 12.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or whatever. But
it's
working
like the Photoshop syndrome or something. Yeah.
God, it's so bad. But using GitHub, like I can actually save everything in one place. I can see what changes I've made at what time. And the rest of our teams work on that as well. So whenever I'm pushing code, someone else has to review it and then merge it. So it also helps like get the team working together and having people actually see what I'm working on instead of just me kind of siloed off by myself.
Yeah.
So you guys have always been a pretty big proponent of building from scratch and building by hand.
I think it's a Fabio thing. Yeah. But we have.
Interesting. Yeah. So what is it like actually developing the templates that, you know, you guys have what, over 7 million users at MailChimp? I mean, what's it like building the templates that those users then go and use? What is that process like?
Well, we're actually closer to like 12 million now.
Wow.
Which is, yeah, it's insane. And it's really intimidating. At first it was scary, but now it's just, you know, that's become my norm. So I think the biggest thing that was really strange about switching to that is now I'm doing email development for product instead of for marketing. So I never really fully finish anything. If I'm building a template for an app, I'm just kind of creating a shell. And then we hand it off to our users and I have no idea how they're going to use it. Like I have no clue what sorts of things they're going to throw into it, like what kind of design they're going to do. So I just have to build things as solidly as I can and then just hand them off. And that's like the crazy thing. And then it's just 12 million people doing whatever they want to with the code that I've put together.
Have you noticed, are there any specific tricks that you've had to rely on to account for, yeah, just the crazy shit that people put in emails? I can imagine it's a very defensive designing kind of mentality when you're building like that. But is there anything like really weird for people jumping in, you know, like lists or massive images or anything like that?
There's not like anything too crazy that I have to account for necessarily. I mean, because I don't know what they're going to do. So I just have to build things that I'm like, okay, this isn't necessarily like the newest and coolest way of building things. You know, we're not using like crazy tricks. Like it has to be stuff that's definitely been proven to work. And then just making sure that we're updating stuff as soon as we can. Like if there's something that's supported now or something that wasn't supported and we have to like kill it, just like staying up on that and just making sure that we've got everything working as well as it can.
So how many email clients do you actually support in your development of these templates? I mean, what does your testing process look like?
So we support the top 15 clients that span across all of the lists that users have in MailChimp. So the stuff like iOS, Gmail, Apple Mail. I mean, I could run through the list. Versions of Outlook, Chrome, mobile, Yahoo, Safari. The only sort of big-ish one that we don't outright support is Lotus Notes, because it's a nightmare. And it only accounts for, I think it's like less than 1% of our users' subscribers. So it's such a small percentage and it's such a difficult client that we've done what we can to accommodate all the rest of the big ones. And that's the only one that's really like not fully supported. We do now support BlackBerry because it's amazing. I love BlackBerry. I think I'm like the only person left on the planet who does, and I don't care because that's the best phone I've ever had in my life. And having an actual keyboard was great, and they were indestructible, and they were definitely the coolest phones ever. So I've made that like a push to actually get stuff working on BlackBerry.
Are there any specific like hacks that you typically use for BlackBerry or anything special you have to do there to get it to work?
Well, it's really like not that bad. The spongy stuff that we use, like Fabio's type of development thing that he made, works really well in BlackBerry. So it wasn't like a huge undertaking. I mean, there were a couple little hacky things that I have to include like in the header. But it's really not that bad. Like people talk crap, but BlackBerry's like doing all right.
Nice. So I guess moving on from talking about building for the product, you still work on all the emails that MailChimp sends from a branding perspective, right?
Right.
Yeah. Is the development process for that any different from the product stuff? I'm assuming you're still communicating again with marketing and whoever else, you know. What's the kind of typical development process for MailChimp's own brand emails?
Yeah, that's a bit different because we've got two different types of emails that we send that are like branded emails. We've got like our transactional stuff and then our marketing emails. And marketing handles like the deployment and management of all their own stuff. I just step in to help with the actual template development. And then they have an email person, Brad, and he runs the game on their side. So anything that's being sent or like list segmenting or anything like that, they totally do. I'm still only working with them on the development. And then our transactional emails are a bit more complicated. They were kind of like built through time as we needed stuff. So if we had a new feature or if we needed to provide a new notification for something, they were just kind of thrown together by like usually like a random dev. Like whatever developer was working on that feature, they would just build an email and throw it into the system. And that was one of my first big projects when I started here, which is finding a way to actually organize and catalog them. So now we have a system to manage all that, and they work in conjunction with our marketing emails. So the metadata for those emails has been updated. We've actually got like descriptions and screenshots of each of them and a running list that'll show which ones are active and which ones aren't. So now anybody here can just like hop in and check out what the emails look like and when they're being triggered without having to get into the actual code.
I was going to ask, how long did that kind of initial audit process take? That sounds like a huge task.
Yeah, that took a while. We had like 200 or so emails. So it took me a couple of months, probably like 3 months to run through all of them and find them and then get them all organized and categorized.
What tools are you using to actually like categorize and organize for people to see and view everything?
Well, we have basically just like a spreadsheet set up in our MC admin system.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
So what is, I just wanted to circle back quickly. So what's your actual like testing and approval process like then for whether it's the templated emails you build or the internal emails? I mean, what does that look like for MailChimp?
Well, we have a testing library. We have like a ton of phones. I have an entire drawer full of tablets and phones. And we have two Windows machines and we've got the big new iPad and all that stuff. We have an actual QA team who will run through stuff once it actually gets merged and it's like going out. But I do the first round of testing. So I go through and we have it set up to, I'm only sending to one email address and then it gets deployed to all the phones. But so I'm running through all the different apps. So like Gmail or the Mail app or Inbox or Yahoo or Outlook on the phone, like all the phones, and then testing it on all the devices and then making changes as I need to. So it's a slow
process. Are you loading it up in MailChimp to send a test from MailChimp or how are you sending a test out?
Yeah. I send all the tests actually through MailChimp. So just like a user would send a test campaign exactly the same way.
Gotcha.
So thinking about all of these emails you've built for MailChimp, then what comes to mind as your favorite email that you've ever built for MailChimp?
I love all of my email babies. So I've recently been kind of pushed into learning some design stuff. I'm absolutely not a designer. I'm really bad at it. It's slow and it's painful. So there are a few like themed templates I have done in the app. So that was kind of like a cool learning experience, but I think my favorite ones were the pro guides emails. They were really fun. They were simple. It's just like an image and then a bit of copy underneath it. But I liked the direction we took and I really liked those colors. I mean, that's probably like my favorite thing, just like the aesthetic of them. And it felt very MailChimp-y. Plus I got to work with our marketing designers and they're just so fun to work with. So that whole project was just like a really good experience.
Yeah, it's very simple, but I just love the design of it. And it's a great way to just sort of showcase, you know, your pieces of content that you have.
Yeah.
I definitely want to go over some of our favorite ones that we love from MailChimp. I love the agencies, MailChimp for Agencies series of emails that you've done recently. They're just a very unique sort of email design that you typically don't see. I love sort of the moving blocks in some of them that you have, you know, great hero area, really nice big bold text and big text, which is something you're familiar with you know, MailChimp. But even just, you know, some of the call to actions down at the bottom, how they're like, you know, this full width sort of color bar, which has like a massive arrow pointing to it. I just thought it was really unique and it definitely stood out compared to a lot of other emails. Jason, I know you've liked seeing these just as much as I have.
Yeah, definitely. I think my favorite part of those moving blocks are just a great little touch. It's very subtle, but it like works really well with the design, which is awesome. The ones I really like though are the what's in store emails. So correct me if I'm wrong, if I get this story wrong, but you guys started up your own essentially a web shop to sell. You guys sold what, socks now, some pins. But as a way for MailChimp to dog food your own product, you wanted to see what it felt like to actually sell something online and use MailChimp as a platform for communicating with people. But as part of that, you guys did this What's in Store series of emails, which essentially just goes through the process of building that web shop, worrying about things like copywriting and the design, setting up the shop itself, all this stuff. But I love the tone of these emails. They're very personal. It uses handwritten images and stuff for like really great effect. But it's nice and simple, and it's very different from like the MailChimp Pro guides from a design standpoint, but it still feels very, very MailChimp-y. But yeah, I absolutely love those ones.
Yay, so, good.
And you actually, I mean, you created this to actually help test out your own new features, right, Alex?
Right. So Meg, who's someone that we have in marketing, actually had the idea to do this a while ago, and they just let her run with it. So she set up everything on her own. Like, I mean, well, she had help from other people around the office, but yeah, she just wanted to get like the true experience of what it's like to be a small business trying to use MailChimp. And so she didn't have any experience with a lot of this stuff. She had never done like a Shopify account or anything and had never actually used like a MailChimp account. And so she did all of that just for the sake of like solidarity with our users. She was like, okay, let's actually see what it's like to use this. And then we're using her experience to like kind of help change features and change things in MailChimp to make it easier for people to use. And so it's been really fun for us to follow her too. Like all the stuff that we've done, all the money that we make from any of these things goes towards nonprofits. So we get to have like warm fuzzies from doing that stuff. And then her tone is really cool. Like that's just Meg. Like that's how she sounds all the time. She's got super awesome tone and like her jokes are always hilarious. And yeah, it's been a really cool experience for us.
It's pretty cool just to be able to dog food your own product and use it that way and, you know, give feedback and iterate on it to improve it. That's pretty cool. So we want to get your reaction. There's been a ton of news here lately, Alex, all in the email design and development world. We're going to get your reaction to some of the Gmail news, Microsoft news coming up. But first, we just want to take a quick break, let everybody know that they can catch this podcast at emaildesignpodcast.com. All of the show notes and links, everything we talk about will be right there, and you can catch up on all the past episodes. You can subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, SoundCloud, and YouTube. Tweet along with the hashtag email design podcast. And Alex, what's your Twitter handle? You are
at Alex Kelly Says, so which made more sense as an AIM screen name than a Twitter handle, but that's fine.
Was that your actual screen name back in the day?
Oh yeah. Yep. That's why I was like, oh, I'll just put this on Twitter and it'll make sense, but it doesn't. It's fine.
Nice. Really, so at Alex Kelly Says, you can follow Alex there. Make sure you give her a follow. You can ask her any questions, follow up with her there. And we have a great special 14-day free trial of Litmus. You can just go to litmus.com/gift card and input the coupon code podcast for 14 days of free Litmus. Alex, are you a Litmus user, customer?
Yeah, we've used Litmus. we usually do like the actual testing on devices, but before I was working at MailChimp, I absolutely used Litmus. And I love Builder. You know that I already am just wanting it to be offline, which is a huge ask, but I do love Builder. And I think that's a really awesome tool for people who are working, actually doing like development stuff. Like, and it's seamless with the testing stuff too. So that's really great.
Cool. Yeah. So yeah, I like, that's great. I'd rather have Alex pitch it than us since we work at Litmus. So yeah, definitely, you know, you can use Builder. You can see what your email looks like in over 50 different email clients as you build, as you test simultaneously as you go. Make sure you don't run into any rendering errors with Outlook and Gmail, iOS, Lotus Notes too, if you needed to test in that. But hopefully there's not too much of that we have to worry about anymore. So yeah, just go to litmus.com/giftcard and input the coupon code podcast for a 14-day free trial of Litmus.
All right. So getting back into it, there's been a ton of news lately. This has been the summer of like email industry, hopefully improvements, specifically with Litmus and the Microsoft partnership. But more recently, right before last week's Email Design Conference, San Francisco, Gmail announced that they're going to be supporting, media queries and embedded styles, which is a huge, update to the Gmail rendering that we're accustomed to. So we want to get your take on what this means for the industry, whether or not this really affects you and your process. And I think I heard this question a ton during the conference is, with this update with Gmail, do we need hybrid or spongy coding still? Does that still have a place in the industry? Or can we all move to that kind of traditional responsive approach or something else out there? So what do you think, Alex?
Well, I'll start with my initial reaction to it. It's actually on Twitter. So I posted a screenshot of the blog post before it got taken down the first time, which I was freaking out because I was like, okay, this is obviously a prank. They put this up there and then it immediately was removed. I was in the email geek Slack and everyone's like losing their minds collectively. But my tweet was with that screenshot and it just was like, what is happening right now? Oh my God. With like 12 G's. And yeah, I was losing my mind. I mean, it's pretty awesome. Gmail has been so difficult to work with, but we've done it. I mean, we've made it work with the spongy stuff. So our process isn't really going to have to change all that much, because although we were making templates that worked in Gmail, we were also building them to work in places where we had support for things like media queries already. So now it's just, instead of being like pieced together to work responsively, they're just going to work like they do in the rest of the responsive clients. So we're not going to have to do like a ton of changing with that stuff. The only thing is we don't know how Gmail is going to handle attribute selectors yet, which was a question that they were asking around a lot at the conference last week. But we stopped using those once we didn't need them for Yahoo anymore. So that's not really an issue for us either. And then on your point about like, does spongy hybrid development stuff still have a place? Like, yeah, absolutely. I think so. The support isn't even rolled out yet. I mean, it'll be the end of the month, but not yet. Like, it'll still have to work in the meantime. And then we're always going to be designing and developing stuff for the least common denominator. Like we're email devs, like our job is to hack stuff. Like that's the best part. Like, yeah, we're still going to need it, I think.
Do you think you're going to need to, do you think some things could be tweaked with sort of the existing implementation once Gmail rolls out this update to maybe some things aren't necessary, or do you think anything needs to be tweaked?
Well, I mean, I think, with the inlining stuff, that's not going to be as necessary, but I feel like there's still some clients that we're going to have to be inlining for, right?
I mean, it would be obscure. It would be an edge case apps with low usage for sure. But if you wanted to capture the entire market, you would definitely need to inline. I mean, I'm not sure off the top of my head. I mean, maybe, you know, there's some Exchange servers on Outlook versions, you know, on Windows Phone, this and that, things like that. Or like, you know, just really like startup type email apps that maybe don't support it. But yeah, I mean, you know, this is under the assumption that Gmail is actually going to roll this out and it's going to work everywhere like we hope it does.
Right. I mean, we're going to be testing the ever-living shit out of this stuff.
Yeah.
We're not just going to be like, oh, yeah, Gmail supports media queries. Cool. Like, as soon as this stuff gets rolled out, I'll probably spend like a week or two just testing this and seeing exactly how stuff is going to be rendering. Hopefully it'll work like they say it do. I do have confidence in them. But yeah, we're going to have to, we'll see. And then if we need to make changes from there, we definitely will. But I don't anticipate us having to make a ton of changes.
So this was probably, I feel like Gmail, this update addresses probably the major pain point for email developers traditionally. Barring that, any other client, what is the one update you would love to see happen, whether that's with Outlook or Yahoo or whoever else? Now that Gmail supports media queries and or will support media queries and embedded styles, what's the next thing you want to see happen that would make everybody's life that much easier?
I don't want to use VML anymore. I want that to just go away. I mean, I've read more outdated documentation on VML than I've ever read about like anything in my life. And so that's a very frustrating thing to have to work with. Like it would be fine if there was a bit better stuff that you could read about it, but I'm reading things that are like, oh, this isn't applicable anymore, so it doesn't really matter. And I'm like, yeah, well, I'm an email developer. Like it does matter. It matters to me. So just not having to monk with VML. So just Outlook being like, okay, yeah, this isn't supported anymore. So we're for real gonna like allow you to use things like background images and things.
So improving the Word rendering engine to support just sort of background, basic background CSS.
Yes, that would be very nice.
Well, it's actually cool, though, because, I mean, Gmail, first time ever that an email client has actually published official documentation around what they're going to support, at least for CSS.
Yeah, which is totally amazing. Like, that whole sheet is just, I mean, life-changing. Like, we've always just kind of had to, you know, test things as we go and figure it out. So for them to do that, I'm really hoping that starts a trend.
Yeah, and we're working with Microsoft, so we're working on it, Alex.
I've already submitted tickets. I'm in there with you. I'm trying to help the cause as much as I can, too.
Yep. Outlook@litmus.com. You can submit your bugs there before we have a feedback loop in the app. So if you have any Outlook bugs, submit them there. And we're working with Microsoft directly on this stuff. So you've been in email for, what, 3 years now about or so, doing email type of things. How do you think sort of the both email design as an industry and as a community has changed since you've become involved?
Yeah, it's been around 3 years. I think like the biggest difference for me personally is that now I actually feel comfortable talking to y'all. I used to just sort of like be on the sidelines and trying to work up the confidence to like say something in a thread of tweets. I'd say like one thing and it would get ignored. And I was like, oh, okay. Like I'm trying. But I don't know how much has really like changed with the community. I mean, there's still like a very tight knit group of people who are there to help others. It seems just as helpful and supportive as it was, you know, 3 or 4 years ago when I first found it. The biggest thing, yeah, is just like I feel comfortable in the group now. And I feel like I've also kind of moved into a position where I can actually help other people. I mean, I still deal with like the imposter syndrome crap, but I try to help like whenever I can.
Are we going to get you up on stage anytime soon?
Okay. I'm going to try. I am not a huge fan of public speaking. It makes me very nervous and very sweaty. But I'm willing to try. I think I have some things that could help other people. And so I'm going to try and get over myself and just be there for others and share some information. So possibly, probably.
Yeah. I mean, that's awesome. And you should. I think we all struggle with imposter syndrome to some degree. I mean, I'm sure Jason's like actually put himself out there so much as to have written books on this topic, right?
Yeah.
Like, and I'm sure Jason, you can speak to that more, but I mean, I'm sure we experience it all to some level, but I think one of the big things you and I have learned is that the key thing that just sort of separates people is just the, maybe not necessarily their individual knowledge, but the perception of them because they share more than others, right?
Right. Yeah. I think that's the most important thing. And I think as long as you're addressing that, then you'll be on good footing going forward, you know. I still definitely deal with it, especially because more and more I'm moving away from like working on emails on a daily basis, so I don't have like the practical knowledge as much as I used to. But still just getting as involved as you can through, you know, the Limits community, events, writing on your own blog, or I know you kind of lurk on the Email Geeks Slack channel too. All that stuff's good, you know. So as long as people do that, then you're in good shape.
Yeah.
I actually had a conversation with you, Kevin, about this in London.
Yeah.
I just like straight up asked him. I was like, I don't feel like I'm doing enough. Like, am I present enough in the community? He was like, no. And I wanted his honest opinion, you know, because like, I don't want to seem like I'm this aloof person who's, you know, not willing to help, because I came from the trenches, you know, I came from learning from y'all. And that was the biggest help, was having people like you out there putting information out and sharing what you were learning and things. And I want to be one of those people too. So.
Yeah, that's awesome. And this podcast is a perfect place to get started with this, to, you know, start just sharing more and putting yourself out there more. And I mean, that's what I love about the podcast. It's sort of my only way to contribute back a lot, because like Jason said, I'm becoming more and more removed myself. But in terms of giving back, one of the other interesting things is that you're also interested in giving back to other women and children sort of in development, which I thought is interesting. Could you talk about some of the initiatives that you've worked on and why you're passionate about this cause?
Yeah, well, I think it all started when I switched my major to computer science my sophomore year of college. And I kind of noticed it was like overwhelmingly male dominated. And I don't really know why that is, because historically, like, there have been some pretty cool ladies doing computer science stuff. But for whatever reason, it just kind of has switched. And a lot of females have dropped out of engineering and like hard sciences. So once I found groups that were actively trying to get more females into tech, I was like all for it. So I joined the Women of Email group. Hi, ladies. I've done a panel for Women in Tech, and then I've become friends with the awesome ladies who work with Women Who Code. And then there was a brief amount of time where I started and was running a girls code group here in Atlanta that was teaching girls ages 8 to 18 how to do development stuff. And working with kids is great. I mean, I wish someone would have reached out to me earlier and tried to get me into development. I could have saved myself a lot of time and money. I mean, I hopped around to like a bunch of different college majors and just wasted a lot of time before I found computer science. And when you first get into it, it's extremely intimidating. Like it's a hard field to just break into. And I felt like a lot of the people who were already doing it chose that because they had experience with it. So I was coming in at 20 years old with very limited exposure to computing and just like general computer knowledge. And so I was already at a disadvantage. So I really just want to make sure like no one else ever feels like that. Like I'm trying to lower the bar for entry and get people who are less likely to just jump into it, to like actually look into it and see if it's something that they are interested in.
That's awesome. And it's womenofemail.org, since I know that's probably more related to people listening to this podcast, to check out that group. And I mean, we're not actually in it ourselves, Jason or I, so you could probably speak more to what you're specifically doing there. But I think those types of initiatives are awesome because, and I think we definitely see the split, right? Maybe not so much for marketing. Email marketing feels a bit more balanced. But when it comes to the development side of things, it always does feel scaled to the male side, which is sort of head scratching.
Yeah, absolutely. As the father of two small daughters, I'll personally thank you for doing that kind of work, because I know it's super important. And I've seen, you know, just through their schooling and stuff, it isn't really addressed right now. So I think that's absolutely awesome. So if you do want to get some public speaking experience, you can come up to Michigan and teach a class to my daughters on computer coding or something like that.
I'd love to. Michigan is great. before it gets too cold. Anytime before, like, the next month.
Yeah, it's got to be real soon.
So when you're speaking to those people, especially people that haven't been exposed to the industry or might just be getting started in web design, development, or email, what's one piece of advice you would give to them?
I think just like not being afraid to try something new is the biggest thing. I mean, yeah, like I said, it's super intimidating just to jump in and be like, oh my God, like, I don't know anything about computers. How am I going to start doing development? But once you learn one language, it makes it so much easier to do other stuff. Like once you start getting into the mindset and understanding the logic that's behind all of computing, it makes it so much easier. So it seems super overwhelming. I mean, there's like tons and tons and tons of programming languages, and there's tons of resources out there. So a lot of it like gets bogged down in just an overwhelming amount of stuff that you can learn from or people that you can learn from. So just like stick with it, pick one little area and start with that. And then creep on people who are doing stuff out there that you like. Like if you're wanting to do like emails, for example, we'll talk about just like getting into the email field. There are so many newsletters that you can just jump into and subscribe, and you'll just have all this information in your inbox all the time. Like there's the Litmus emails, obviously. Lee Monroe has Design Weekly, Paul Jarvis with his Type E stuff, Action Rocket, Table TRTD has some really fun stuff that they do. Jason, you have a newsletter. Then there's the Litmus Weekly stuff, really good emails. I mean, subscribe to all that stuff. So just see what people who are doing things well are doing and read like what they're saying about the kind of work that they're doing. And then creep on your peers. Like once you start getting into it, creep on that, subscribe to newsletters from brands or businesses that you like. But like put filters in your inbox, cause you'll drive yourself crazy. Creep on Twitter, creep on Litmus. I mean, just creep around. Like my biggest piece of advice. Yeah. Just be a creep and don't be afraid of being creepy.
We need that on a t-shirt or something. I'm kind of curious. Yeah. I have another question as a direct follow-up to that, but first off, I want to hear, what was your first programming language that you learned? If you're computer science, I assume it's like Java or something like that, but is it, what was your first experience with programming?
It was C#, okay, actually. Nice. Yeah, we started with C#. A lot of programs do start with Java, but I was going to like a smaller school and they thought that C# would be the best. I mean, the logic is super similar. Yeah, yeah. So once you start getting into one of those, it's way easier. Like now I've picked up some PHP working here, mm-hmm. And it was super easy. Like I was scared at first because I was like, oh, I've never written PHP, but yeah, once you figure out like a for loop is always going to be a for loop. It's set up in a very similar way. It's just like the syntax might be a little bit different, or like, you know, the keywords that you're using are maybe like a bit different. But yeah, C# was my first one. And I think that's a good one to start with, honestly.
Yeah, I actually come from a C# and .NET shop before Litmus. So I felt fairly comfortable there, and it seemed like a good language. Microsoft has pretty good tools and stuff. So cool. Mm-hmm. Okay. So my other question, that's talking to beginners in the field. For experienced email developers, does that advice change at all? What's your advice for them?
It doesn't change much. I mean, just getting out there, asking questions, talking to people who are doing the same thing that you're doing. I mean, if you're doing email stuff, like just following the email geeks hashtag on Twitter is super helpful. And just getting involved in conversations and asking questions, not being afraid to ask questions. I mean, you'll learn more from people who are doing the exact same thing as you than you will from just like, I mean, you can learn stuff from doing it on your own. But you could also be wasting time trying to figure out something that there's already a solution for that you could find just by interacting with others in your field.
Very cool. All right. How about we say we end this up with some rapid fire questions, Jason, huh? Let's put Alex to the test here. All right, so we're just putting up like a fake 60 seconds on the clock, Alex, and we're just going to power through some of your personal favorites. All right, sound good?
Okay. Yep.
All right. What is your favorite email hack?
Just tables, like straight up. Just tables.
Using tables.
I mean, okay, web devs want to beat us so badly. They use display table all the time. Yeah. Like, you could just use a table. They're great. Like, I actually almost got a tattoo of TD or die on the inside of my lip. Like,
wow.
I almost did it. And then I was like, well, maybe not. But yeah, no, tables all day.
Nice. So what's your favorite and least favorite email client?
Favorite email client is Gmail. even before these changes, they were my favorite because I like problem children, I guess. Least favorite, I'm sorry, Lotus Notes.
What? Who's your favorite email developer to follow?
I really like what Mia and Cam are doing for TableTRTD. Mm. That's just been like a lot of really fun stuff. Like they had a keypad and email the other day, and then they had like this thing where you could build a pizza.
That pizza was so good. Yeah.
Plus, as long as it doesn't have pineapples on it. Oh.
Yo, Domino's needs to get on that. Like I need to go and pitch Domino's. Like, guys, you can do like an interactive pizza builder, and then you can just have the pizza tracker after that. It would be so dope.
Yeah, it was really good.
Yeah, we should do that. What's your favorite CSS property?
Probably max width, because I mean we couldn't do any of the responsive stuff without it. So I think it's the most useful. Nice. Probably.
What's your favorite blog?
Y'all have a really good blog. And then a really good emails has a good blog too, which I always creep on them for inspiration. So their blog is super helpful.
Well, maybe you already answered this with favorite developers to follow, but what's your favorite email newsletter that you subscribe to?
Okay, for content, I really like NextDraft or SitePoint or like anything that NPR sends me. Or okay, this is – you can't ask an email developer to pick their favorite email. It's hard. I have a lot of them. But for design stuff, I do have one distinct favorite. It's the Collective Fund. Mm. Have y'all seen their emails? They're amazing.
Oh, yes.
Some
of our favorites.
Those are just – they're doing some really cool stuff. I like what they're doing. They're breaking boundaries. So Collective Fund for design. And then, I'd say NextDraft for content if I had to pick one.
Nice. If you didn't like that question, you're going to hate this one. What is your, not just newsletter, but what's your favorite email campaign of all time?
The B&Q one with like the interactive carousel stuff, like totally blew my mind. I don't know if this counts as an email. It technically was, but Mark Robinson's talk.
Oh, yeah.
Last year, that ended up actually, the whole thing was an email. So yeah, that.
Nice.
An email about interactive email that was an email, but it wasn't sent.
It was like total email inception, and it was epic, and we all freaked out. So that,
I mean, Jason and I have seen that talk numerous times now together, and like at the end we're still just blown away, like every single
time. I know it's coming, but it's still like that's every badass time.
You never get used to it.
All right, Alex, this has been so much fun. Thank you for coming in and joining us on the podcast today.
Thank you guys.
Do you have anything that you want to plug at all before we sign off? Or
No, I don't know.
Okay. Well, just everybody go follow at Alex Kelly Says on Twitter. Give her a thumbs up for sitting down and doing this and for, just starting to share more of her work. This is really awesome stuff, Alex. So we thank you so much. Just a reminder, you can catch the podcast on SoundCloud, iTunes, and YouTube. Subscribe there. Also, be sure to check out every single episode at emaildesignpodcast.com with full show notes and links, a full archive. You can check it all out there. You can tweet along with the hashtag emaildesignpodcast. And you can also go to litmus.com/giftcard and input the coupon code podcast for 14 days of free Litmus. And Alex, I have a question for you. We need a brand new tagline for the podcast. Yeah. It used to be keep your table cells aligned and your styles in line. Do you have like any ideas as to what we need to switch? Because now with Gmail,
it might not apply. Keep creeping.
Yeah, TD or die, keep creeping. I do like keep creeping. That does seem to be my tagline. I would have to give that some thought. I don't know, like, directly on the spot. You should ask Email Geek. They'll probably have better suggestions than I do. But, keep creeping. Sounds good.
Until next time, TD or die, keep creeping. See you.